What's up, everyone? It's Johnny here with the Soulful Hunter Podcast. Going to do a little shout out for all you men out there and challenge you and ask you if you are looking for ways to go deeper and be around a group of men who are looking to find personal empowerment, emotional freedom, and redefine the legacy that you'll leave, then listen up. The Vulnerable Heroes Men's Retreat Weekend has 6 spots open for their VH2 class of guys. What to expect during these weekends is 2 4-day retreats that are 90 days apart. Participants must attend both to be able to join. You're going to be in a beautiful location of the Cascade Mountains, 2 hours outside of Seattle, Washington. You're going to be in small group coaching, go through exercises, personal growth sessions, and storytelling. Lodging, food, and activities such as fishing, hiking, games, and much, much more are included. You're going to be able to leave these weekends with the development of your personal legacy plan. You're going to have weekly group accountability check-ins, monthly coaching with trainer and coach Lucas Mack, membership to the private Vulnerable Hero Legacy community, and just be able to dig deeper within your own soul. For more information, go to www.lucasmack.com/retreats. That's LucasMack.com/retreats. So that you can find out more about the Vulnerable Heroes weekends and start to develop to become your own vulnerable hero. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Soulful Hunter Podcast. I am your host, Johnny Mack. Through this podcast, I am on a mission to transform lives through primal adventure and to spread my mission of mentorship is conservation. This podcast is powered by Washington Backcountry, a resource for all hunters new and old. To find out more about Washington Backcountry, go to wabackcountry.com or search for Washington Backcountry on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Soulful Hunter Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Mack. I'm joined tonight by the wonderful Jana Waller, and we are continuing on with the second edition of the Why series. And tonight we're joined with Jana, and we're specifically talking about conservation, everything conservation. You know, being a new hunter, I got into hunting not because of this concept of conservation, but because I wanted to hunt. I wanted the adventure. I wanted the meat. And yet, through the journey of becoming a hunter, you hear this term conservation thrown around so much and so often. You know, hey, do you want to round up for conservation at Cabela's or Bass Pro's? Or, hey, do you want to donate here? And all these things. And we as hunters, we like to call ourselves conservationists. But truly, we need to understand what conservation is and really wrap our heads around it before we can just go ahead and preach about it. And so tonight we're diving into what is conservation, and we're going to talk a little bit about what Jana did on her recent hunt as well as everything that goes with that. So Jana, thanks for joining us tonight.
Oh, it's always my pleasure. This is one of my favorite podcasts. I feel like you're just really real and down to earth. I love your perspective of being a new hunter. So it's always fun to chat with you. And I love this topic. Conservation is near and dear to my heart. The last decade of my life, I've been uberly involved with it on a volunteer basis. And I'm looking forward to chatting tonight about it.
I love it. Well, thanks for joining us. So the very first thing I just really want to address right now is the definition of conservation. I think this is something that easily we could go to the root of the word, and to understand conserve is to save for the future. But the definition, like if you were to Google what conservation means, it means the prevention of wasteful use of a resource. And so the idea that we as hunters are conservationists, it means that we are preventing the wasteful use of a resource. A resource could be whatever it is that our country loves to use. We as hunters are specifically talking about wildlife and wildlife habitat. So I think that's the very first idea, is that calling yourself a conservationist is that you are on a mission to enjoy wildlife and to reap the benefits of it, but you're here to protect it and to make sure that it lasts for generations to come. So You are a member of a few conservation groups, right?
Oh yeah, a lot of them. All right. I am a lifetime member of the National Wild Turkey Federation, a lifetime member of a Safari Club, a lifetime member of the Mule Deer Foundation, an annual member of the Sportsman's for Fish and Wildlife, annual member of the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, annual member of NRA, which, believe it or not, has a lot to do with conservation. So I keep quite busy with my conservation groups. And one thing I'd love to really start out by talking about is that I think there's so many different aspects of conservation, but to make it really simple for people is that conservation kind of comes in two forms. There's the involuntary, we're all conservationists, whether you like it or not. If you hunt or fish, you're a conservationist because your dollars in purchasing those hunting licenses or fishing licenses or duck stamps or tags or the dollars that you're spending, part of that goes towards habitat management, wildlife management, herd restoration. It goes back to the states that you're hunting or fishing in. And that is, of course, involuntary. A lot of people don't even know that correlation between the fact of buying a hunting license or tags or fishing and that money going where it's going. And then there's sort of that's involuntary. There's the voluntary side of conservation that I think of when I think of the National Wild Turkey Federation or the Mule Deer Foundation or groups like that, where you become a volunteer. You voluntarily give up your time to do projects with groups like that, or you go to a banquet, even if you're just buying a banquet dinner ticket. You know, you're spending money for that conservation group. Hopefully they're expecting you to go to the banquets and bid on all the amazing auction items and the hunts and the guns and enter into the gun raffles or the optics packages and all that. But that is sort of the volunteering side of conservation. But there's that strong connection that people don't understand. One really easy link for people to Google and understand it is the Pittman-Robertson Act of 1937. It was actually a federal aid and wildlife restoration act that was put in place to make sure that we were managed, that hunters were managed, that we weren't overtaking the land, like you said, that we weren't, shooting too many ducks, that we weren't harvesting too many deer, that we were taking care of the land. And it's a tax that is put onto hunting guns, ammunition, and other hunting products. It's been amended many times over the years since 1937. But, a lot of people don't even understand that when you're buying hunting-related products or licenses, you are a conservationist.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome to hear. And it's really interesting, like, you think back to the westward expansion of the United States, how the buffalo used to roam all over, and then we almost wiped out an entire species just from unregulated killing or slaughtering of these animals. Right. And us as hunters are not here to eliminate or wipe out these animals. We are here to make sure that they are around for later generations, but we enjoy the pursuit of them and everything that goes along with it.
Right, exactly. Jack Hanna. Everyone knows who Jack Hanna is. Jungle Jack Hanna. He has been around forever. He's got an animal show still on Saturday mornings on like ABC or CBS, one of the mainstream networks. Jack Hanna said it the best. I was at a fundraiser a couple different years in a row at his house here in Montana. And he said, hunters are the greatest conservationists. They give more back to wildlife and preserving wildlife than any other group in this country. And it's so funny because I talk a lot about this with non-hunters, friends of mine who don't hunt and who are not in my world per se. And they're shocked, quite frankly, to hear that connection, to hear that we hunters are raising more for wildlife. Someone like the, PETA or the Humane Society of the United States, the HSUS, which is the biggest anti-hunting organization out there, whose only 2% of their budget goes to animals. I mean, people don't understand that. And I'm proud to be a hunter. And one thing I really talk about when I'm going into high school classes or hunter safety classes is we hunters need to stand tall. We're the ones out there who are walking the walk, talking the talk, putting our money back into the herds, putting our money back into the habitat restoration and the wildlife management. You know, it's not an exact science. Whether you're dealing with the Department of Natural Resources or Fish and Game, they're trying really hard, like you had just said, that we don't overuse the resources of each state, that we don't, that we are managing it for generations and generations to come. And that takes money. It takes, you know, you pay the biologists, you pay the office workers, you pay the wardens, like that takes a lot of money. You pay the science-based research to go into, for example, I live in the Bitterroot Valley of, you know, do we have too many mountain lions? Because mountain lions are a beautiful creature, but they can be overpopulated and they can do a tremendous amount of damage on the ungulate population, just like wolves can and bears can. And there, it needs to be balanced out. Well, who's going to do the balancing? It all kind of trickles back down into those departments, you know, those states' departments. And we hunters are the ones that are primarily funding that.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting is, you know, people's money goes where their heart is.
Yes.
And you follow the money, find where people's heart lies. So like if we really, like if you and I were surfers and we love the beach, we would do everything we could to preserve our surfing opportunities or our opportunities to water access. But because we're hunters, we are not only fighting the ability to keep animals around and the habitat around, but really hunting is something that if the general population decided they wanted to vote it out and say hunting is not going to be allowed anymore, it's weird, but that's like something that could actually happen in America.
It could happen. You know, it's funny when people talk about that topic of it oh, that'll never happen. They're never going to take away our gun rights. They're never going to take away hunting. You don't know. And the anti-hunting groups have millions and millions of dollars that they raise every year to take away our rights privately, secretly, behind closed doors. They take, right now, California just banned bobcat hunting and trapping. Yep. And while that might not affect most people, they think, well, I don't really hunt bobcats anyway, and you don't eat them really, which is wrong, you do. But most people don't think you eat them. The management of bobcats and coyotes, and what's next? What are they going to do next? If they do ban coyote hunting, for example, let's just say that coyotes do so much damage on fawns and elk calves. They can team up on bird populations, pheasant eggs, turkey eggs. It all is a balance together. And when you start governing states and they start taking away hunting rights, whether it's something as like simplistic as a bobcat versus, you know, comparatively speaking, we in this country, more of us are turkey and deer hunters than we are bobcat hunters, mm-hmm. but it's still a step in their right direction of banning hunting permanently. And it's scary. It can happen. That's why you and I have talked on other podcasts about how frustrating it is on social media to see people bashing each other and, oh, you know, that buck was too small. I wouldn't have taken that buck, or, oh, you know, just be, or I am a longbow shooter. Compounds are for wussies, whatever, like people bashing each other. I want to just cringe because together we're stronger and we hunters need to band together. If it's legal and ethical and moral and science-based, we need to stop criticizing one another, band together, and start really looking at evils that be that are lurking in the courtrooms trying to take away our rights.
Right. And so going with that and then going back to the money aspect, you know, conservation is extremely important with the financial aspect because people listen to money. You know, money talks. Money talks very loudly if you can bring it. And so just to throw some dollars out there for all you listeners to get an understanding of how much money is actually given back towards conservation of wildlife and wildlife agencies and habitat. $8 million a day is what's given back to support wildlife agencies and wildlife habitat. On average, almost $2,500 a year is what hunters spend on the sport. And $796 million a year for conservation programs, $440 million to conservation efforts. And this is why we're able to still stay strong when you look at the population of America, and it is just booming. And yet there's the numbers of hunters have gone down between in 2011 to 2016, we lost 2.2 million hunters. And that's like, you know, right. Small game, upland bird, waterfowl, big game. And yeah. Now in 2016, we had 11.5 million hunters, which doesn't sound like, wow, that's a lot of people, but not compared to the population in which we have here in America.
No, it used to be a lot easier to think of it. Like, it used to be that 10% of the population were hunters and 10% were definitely anti and against hunters. This is a poll over a decade ago. And then you'd think of the 80% as the nons, who are non-hunters, but they don't really have an opinion either way. And so a lot of the conservation groups got together in this last decade, and they're trying to figure out, how do we reach those nons? How do we, you know, market to them to show them our healthy, sustainable, beautiful lifestyle, to where they don't have to get into hunting if they don't want to, but they're certainly not going to be against it. That's so important. And I heard a talk from Shane Maloney, Mahoney last year, where he was saying that he believes it's less than 4% now. And I can't quote where he got that number, but it's scary. You know, all of our, when we think about it, we're losing like the generation of the men and women who were in World War II, you know, our heroes. Those heroes are dying off. And in those generations, they all hunted. All of our grandfathers hunted, you know. As we're losing that generation, we're not replacing them fast enough. Now, women hunters, they are on the rise. The demographics of women purchasing hunting license is going up and up every year. But we're losing too many male hunters, and it's a problem. It's a societal problem. I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, the technology age we live in today. The fact that kids are so involved in so many multiple activities. A lot of kids are in three different sports at the same time, you know, or other kind of clubs. And while I think all that is great, it does take away from the ability and the time for the youth to get into hunting, because it takes a commitment. It takes a lot of money. And it's a problem that all of the conservation groups are continually to talk about, you know, including, you know, then Secretary of Interior Ryan Zinke, when he came into that position, he started the Hunting and Shooting Sports Conservation Council. And I've been lucky enough to sit on that panel in DC, and it is definitely a hot topic, along with other brilliant topics that we'll have to talk about down the road in your podcast. How do we maintain the hunters that we have and keeping them engaged and purchasing license and tags every year? And how do we get new hunters involved? And part of it is what we're talking about is the conservation aspect. And that is what I think a lot of kids in grade school and junior high and high school need to hear about, is that you need to help us help the future generations to get outside and get into the great outdoors. Because by doing so, by purchasing those licenses, by getting involved, you know, by going through hunter safety classes, that's what we're going to do. We're going to be able to, you know, sustain those budgets, basically, is what I'm, you know, yeah. What I'm after.
Yeah, absolutely. And so one of the things that is interesting hearing you talk about, and I got like these ideas and questions racing in my head, is if you take someone who is like an animal lover, like take people that love watching birds, the Audubon Society. You know, how much money are they truly giving back to protecting wildlife habitat and conserving the animals that they love and love watching, versus, you know, people that love to just backpack or hike or just do different things and recreate on our public lands and the same lands that hold the animals that we love to chase and pursue. And so, you know, hunters are the major, they are the anchor, the capstone, but yet the foundation of the finances that go back into conservation.
Right.
And it's really interesting to hear you just talk about all this. I was coming across on Facebook the other day. Oh, this is probably maybe a week ago, and Robbie Kroger from Blood Origin shared the rhino that went auctioned for someone to go on a hunt for. Yeah. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Are you talking a couple years ago or currently?
Oh man,
I thought it was currently, but maybe it was a couple years ago. It was this rhino that was killing others and being a very big nuisance. And mm-hmm. so the wildlife agency ended up raffling off a hunt for it. And it was either the non-hunters who wanted to protect animals could raise enough money to buy the animal and then do whatever they want with it, or okay. someone could pay the amount of money to buy it and then they could release it, put it in a zoo, or hunt it. And okay. and at the end of the day, it ended up being a hunter that was willing to pay the amount of money for that animal. And that money now is going to go back into the habitat to protect the rest of the herd and the rest of the animals. And it's just a circle of life that just keeps going. And I think yeah. it just shows that the hunters, when push comes to shove, it's the hunters that step up to the plate and answer the call.
Absolutely. It's like the whole Cecil the Lion debacle. You know, it's the same thing. People who have no educational basis for their opinion, they see that some, you know, dentist paid a big dollar amount to go shoot Cecil the Lion. And they don't understand the whole concept of when a hunter goes over to Africa. And we can even break it down because it's similar in this country. But the Africa issue, that African lion issue, went so crazy. And what people don't understand is that when hunters go over to Africa and they pay, say, $25,000 to hunt a lion, that $25,000 is going towards anti-poaching patrols. It's going towards science-based, you know, studies to look at the numbers in certain villages and where the problematic lions are. They actually went in and culled, meaning you go and there's too many of a certain species in an area and you take them out. They actually went in, I don't know how, a year or two after Cecil the Lion, and they shut down the hunting and culled 200 lions that didn't have a dollar amount placed on their heads. And so that money is not, you know, not going back into Africa and back into wildlife management and anti-poaching and all these other things. They don't understand that connection. They think it's just some trigger happy rich dude over in Africa who wants a lion rug in front of his fireplace. And right, you can even take that same concept here and say,
well,
you know,
the state of California and mountain lions.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. I mean, you're not even allowed to live in California and drive across state borders and say, come hunting here in the Bitterroot Valley of Montana, where we have an overpopulation of lion. You can't even come here and then take your lion back to California.
Right. It's, so, it's, I mean, wild.
Yeah. You can't even, you know, there's the whole Lacey Act and and it's just so misunderstood. And let's get back a little bit to conservation within this country, because I'm so passionate about it. And it's amazing to me. And I actually think things are changing. I think we're doing a really good job of getting that message out there. And the reason I say this, I went to get my haircut last night at a new place. And the other reason, and I was in the mall and it was really late. And the two young girls who were checking me out, we started talking and I said, do you want to make another appointment for trim? And I said, you know, I'm not sure I'm going to be gone elk hunting at next month. And, oh, you're going elk hunting. And we started talking about hunters with these two young gals. They probably looked like they were both young 20s. And they were super excited about hunting. One of them said, I really want to get into hunting, but I don't know anyone who hunts, but I think it would be so cool. I follow some Instagram pages. And the other girl said, yeah, my brothers are big hunters and I'm a little bit of a bird hunter and I'm going to get into it when I'm done with school. And they both were uberly fascinated about it. And the one younger gal said, yeah, people don't understand that hunters are animal lovers and it's their money that pays for everything. I was just kind of shocked that
that's
she
awesome.
Said, yeah. And I said, I can't even tell you how excited I am that to hear you say that, because once in a while I even catch myself into like, I want to tell people what I do for a living because it's going to get in this whole shocked look. And then I'm going to have to explain things. And these two girls already had it down and it was exciting to see where I was maybe being a little bit judgmental on them, you know, thinking that maybe they weren't hunters or they wouldn't understand or, no, I think that so word's getting out there that, yeah, we hunters are animal lovers and we're the biggest contributors to wildlife management in this country. I think it needs to be on a more mainstream level, but I think people are slowly starting to grasp the sustainability lifestyle. They're starting to grasp all the good things that hunting does. And the whole idea of predator management is becoming a lot easier to talk to in this last year than other previous years. And I think it slowly is taking a shift, but we all need to constantly work at it too. We all need to continue to educate ourselves, to get involved. It's so easy to sit back and just not get involved. But I encourage everybody to get involved in something that's local, something that's easy for them to go to. I guarantee you every city has banquets, whether it's Pheasants Forever, Ducks Unlimited, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Mule Deer Foundation, Turkey Federation. There's all kinds of banquets and they're so much fun. You know, buying a dinner ticket, you're contributing back. If you can't go to the banquet, how about donating something, you know, some artwork or, you know, the company that you work for could get a table there. You know, like I really encourage people to get involved in their local conservation groups. And that is, again, like I said, sort of the volunteer side of conservation, because let's face it, I don't know where my local community needs to spend their money on, let's say, you know, taking down fences, putting up fences, putting in water troughs for the elk, for the deer. You know, maybe my fish and game department needs to do a study on wild turkeys. You know, I don't know. I don't have the time to do the research to figure out where my money is best spent locally, but the conservation groups do. So get involved with them and help them raise the money to do what's best for your local environment or your state or even the country.
Yeah. Okay. So you're an amazing person and absolute, like, it's an honor to always talk with you.
If you
could sell somebody who is not a part of a conservation group but is a hunter or an outdoor enthusiast, what would you say to them? How would you get somebody to truly want to give back in that manner?
Well,
I'm
putting
you on the spot on this one.
Yeah, no. I mean, I guess maybe I would ask them, what does it look like if, like, I would ask them how old they are. Do you have kids? Do you have grandkids? What would it be like if your kids or your grandkids couldn't hunt? What would that do to you? And what does that look like if you tried to picture what that future looks like? And that, I think, can really resonate with people. Most people that I'm talking to are either they have kids or they're planning on having kids or they even have grandkids and they want their children to experience the same thing we get to. They want, when you're out, they don't want to go out for 7 days and see three elk. You know, they want to be able to, if you're going to spend 7 days in the backcountry, you want to see healthy herds. You want to be able to be out in the summertime and maybe in the springtime, go shed hunting and see healthy populations. You know, every hunter that I know wants to protect what our country's hunting heritage and the wildlife that we have here, the resources that we have. And if you don't start to really seriously think, how are you personally playing a part in protecting that, then you're missing the boat. And I would ask what that future looks like for their kids or grandkids. And if they want it to be around, then I would ask, what are you doing to get involved?
Yep.
And it's simple as, honestly, going to a banquet it's really fun. You're surrounded by 200 other passionate hunters. You have a chance. My dad is the luck. My dad wins a gun every time he goes to a banquet, you know, like there's shotgun, muzzleloaders, handguns. They have clothing, backpacks, optics, like everything you think of that you need to hunt. It's up for auction at those kind of banquets. Go to one, see how fun they are. You know, don't let the price of the dinner ticket scare you away. Like, oh, you know, it's kind of pricey. Well, that's part of your contribution. And it's a super fun night. If you add it up all the times you go through the drive-thru or the Starbucks, you know, that's just a few times.
It's funny. That's what I was actually just about to say is I had a conversation with a fellow teacher this week. And I was like, hey, is that coffee you brought or you bought? And they're like, no, I brought it. They're like, Starbucks is like $5 every single time you go now. And it's like, okay, you add that up for 5 days a week to, you know, 25 days in a month. How much money are you spending on coffee?
Right.
And what is it doing for your life versus, you know, spending money into something you love to do and pursue and that being something that like is your passion.
not only that, like, it's for me, I have found so much fun and reward, personal, like just do-gooding, feel-gooders. I feel so good about what I've done slowly over the last 15 years in my skull donations, or even my, like, I make antler necklaces if I don't have time to do a big skull. And I am almost ready to top $73,000 that I've raised in the last 15 years through my artwork. And while that's not a lot compared to some other people who've been really generous with their donations, it's a little bit at a time and it adds up. Yeah. You know, it's so fun. Like, probably the most fun I have with my skulls is when I go to the Western Hun Expo, because that's a huge crowd. If you get the chance, you've got to go to Salt Lake to the Western Hun Expo in February, because it's,
I'll be there. You'll be there.
It is so much fun. And that you've got to buy banquet tickets for Friday and Saturday night. The auctions are off the charts. To see what some of those tags go for is unbelievable. But like, my skulls go for thousands of dollars when normally they go for hundreds. And it's super fun to see, you know, a joint. Usually I do a joint project with Doyle Moss donates a replica of, like, you know, 230-inch monster muley replica that's so beautiful. I'll bling it up with Swarovski crystals. And last year I raised over $7,000 with one skull. Like, wow. That to me is so much fun. But people can do that on any level. I don't care if you make baskets, or you do quilting, or you do whatever you do and you're passionate about. I guarantee you there's a banquet who would love to, you know, take your homemade goods or artwork or earrings or whatever you do. And
or even skill set.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Like, I'm donating this coming year to a Seattle Children's Hospital event, where yeah. I'm offering a DJ service, because I DJ on the side. So I'm going to DJ cool. a party for somebody, and what I would normally charge is just, it's auctioned off for the highest bidder.
I love it. I totally love that idea. Or even, it can be as simple as like a house cleaning.
Yeah.
If I were walking around my local NWTF banquet and I saw, you know, a lot of times there's silent auctions and then the big auctions. If I saw four-hour house cleaning on the silent auction, I guarantee you I'm bidding on that. Like,
absolutely.
You know, yeah, or painting. You paint. I will paint three rooms in your home. Whatever. It doesn't matter what it is. We can give back to conservation groups with skill sets, like you said, with artwork, with maybe you've got a rental home. How about, those are really popular. How about donating to a rental home for the week?
Yeah, a little VRBO action.
Exactly. Someone did that actually at the Sheep Show auction last year. Was like my table of Cryptek ladies. We were all bidding back and forth. Our table was going to like, oh, let's all go in on it together and we'll bid and we'll have a Cryptek ladies legion week there. It'll be awesome. But we got outbid. It went like for like $10,000. It went insane. But that's what I mean. Something simple like that can raise a lot of money quickly. And I would just really encourage people to get involved. It's easy to do when it's on, you know, your local level. And I guarantee you the closest city or even town near you has banquets.
Yeah. And so, given a little bit of a different perspective, people who may not be very familiar with these different conservation groups like NWTFs, like Wild Turkey Federation or Ducks Unlimited or Mule Deer and all this different stuff, you don't have to just go to the banquets and spend hundreds of dollars if you want. You could become a year member for $25 or like that. But any little bit is still you doing your part and giving back and you know, taking care of the future.
When you think about it, most of the memberships are $25 to $30 for an annual membership. They come with a fantastic, I know Mule Deer Foundation, Rocky Mountain Elk, NWTF, which is the Turkey Federation, they all have fantastic magazines. Like, I guess maybe it's because of my age, but I'm a little old school. I still love to hang on to a magazine and sit on the couch and get in my blanket and look through it and read the articles. I still love a good magazine. Yeah. They come with a free magazine. You can belong to basically 10 conservation groups for less than a dollar a day. Yeah. I mean, yeah, become a member, get involved. That's another way to really stay involved too, is if you become a member, you're going to get the magazine, you're going to get emails. You know, it's one thing to follow along on their social media, which is great and keeps you updated, but at least become a member. Because even though it's a little dollar amount, if you know, if hundreds of thousands of people became members, which there are, there's over 250,000 members at NWTF, I believe. You know, that's a lot of money every year. And I think it's totally worth it to protect what we love.
Yeah. So conservation, what is it? This is what we've been talking about all night. And this conversation could go on forever. But the idea is that as hunters, we need to know why we do what we do. And part of why we do it is for conservation. And so that's why we had Jana on tonight to go into the second part of the Why series of what is conservation and why we need to give back. So Jana, thank you so much for your time. Is there anything that you feel like we need to hit a little bit before we part ways?
No, I don't think so. I think we hit the key points, and that is just to educate yourselves, and, you know, and it's a continual process. You know, it's constantly changing. Wildlife management is not it's not an exact science. It's constantly changing. Like right now, the big topic is chronic wasting disease, or EHD, in deer. Deer being the most popular big game species in this country. You know, the times are changing, but we need experts involved. We need biologists involved. We need Department of Natural Resources and Fish and Game involved. And so all of that takes money, and we hunters' dollars pay for a lot of that through the licensing purchases. But we also need to get involved on the volunteer side of things with our conservation groups. Whether you write a check or go to banquets or donate something, we all need to get involved. I think we touched base on that great short, you know, brief podcast. We could go into it in much more detail on other ones, but I think it's an important message that needs to get out there. And I thank you for spreading that message.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And one thing I want to say is that this podcast is not about the should. We're not shooting all over you. We're not saying you should be a member, you should be doing this, doing that. We want you to start reflecting on why you do what you do. Yeah. And with that, if your heart is leading you in the direction of giving back into a conservation group or through different means, then don't be afraid to, and have fun with it. Yeah. Because ultimately you're going to be rewarded, because you can't outgive good.
Exactly. And I'm telling you, it's only going to take one message on, you know, through social media, or one phone call to the chairman of a chapter in your area. And you say, hey, I want to get involved. Trust me when I say they're going to be thrilled, and they're going to point you in the right direction where you can use your skills or gifts or your time to volunteer. It only takes a phone call. And I it's been one of the most rewarding parts of my life.
Yeah. Well, and then so the aspect for the new hunters out there, if you've ever been like, well, I don't know, I don't have anyone that hunts, or I don't know how to get connected with people that hunt, maybe the very first step for you would be to join one of these organizations, because right there you instantly give yourself a community of people that want to support what you're doing and are much more willing to help you out.
I'm so glad you said that. I get that question a lot. I really do. I have a lot of people who message me and say, I don't even know where to get started. And I say, you know, first of all, hunter safety is a fantastic way to start, learn, you know, get the basics down. Doesn't matter how old you are, doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, boy or girl, hunter safety is a great way to start. And then that is what I say, find your local conservation groups, because you're going to surround yourself with people who are knowledgeable, who are fun, who are passionate about hunting or fishing. And it's, yeah, contact them is such a fantastic way to get involved and to learn.
Yeah. I recently I think it was August. So I've never waterfowl hunted, but a part of what I do with Washington Backcountry is throw social engagements to bring hunters together to start building community. And I partnered with the Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife and Ducks Unlimited, and we all did a banquet. Well, with that, I have so many people that are willing and wanting to take me out waterfowl hunting just because I was a part of that banquet, that now I have so many phone numbers that I can call, and this weekend they would take me out without question.
That's so great. That's so great. Yeah. I really believe that 99% of the hunters that I know and the people that are out there and what I see on social media, that we're here to help one another. You know, there's trust me when I say I understand most people are not going to give up their GPS coordinates for their best public land spots. That's not what I'm talking about. But I'm talking about most people are really generous with their knowledge and their time and, you know, even just helping other people get started or pointed in the right direction of maybe what gear they need or how do they learn about, like you said, waterfall hunting is a, there it is a different experience in and of itself, you know, with the decoys and the calling and where do you go and how many, and the bag limits. And there's a lot to learn in every single different type of hunting, whether you're out chasing antelope on the prairie or you're bird hunting or you're, you know, looking for elk. It's there's a lot to learn, yeah. But I think most hunters are excited when they get to talk to other new hunters and are willing to help.
Yep. So this has been the Why in Conservation. You'll hear if you go check out Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation's, their big thing is hunting is conservation. But next week on episode 3 of the Why series, we are going to talk about mentorship, it's conservation, and what that means in regards to building the next generation and all that. So make sure to stay tuned and follow along, subscribe to the podcast. Go check out Jana's stuff at Skullbound TV. She does amazing work, and you just got back from a killer antelope hunt that was really fun to follow along with on social media. So how did that go, by the way?
It was great. It was so great. And you know, it's funny that you say that because that hunt, I don't often do a come hunt with me donation just because my calendar is super crazy. You don't get to choose who you get to go hunting with and it can be a little awkward at times, but I have done it a couple times. Well, this was a hunt donated by SNS Outfitters in Wyoming. They're one of the largest outfitters and it was a mule deer antelope combination. Well, a woman named Christy Hubbard and her husband, David, bid on this hunt 2 years ago. It just took this long to get it all together at the National Wild Turkey Federation. They were from South Carolina. It finally, all the date was slowly coming up and finally was here. They joined me in Wyoming. Christy got her mule deer on day 2 in the morning, her antelope in the evening. We had so much fun. On day 3, a blizzard blew in and it was absolutely insane for a couple days. I ended up getting my antelope second to last day despite the weather. But thankfully, the Hubbards and their generosity, we raised a lot of money for the Turkey Federation and thanks to SNS Outfitters. So, you know, there's just ways to give back and get involved. And that was a super fun one. It's going to be a great episode for season 9 of Skullbone TV. And I'm excited to put it together.
I love it. Man, as always, it's an absolute pleasure chatting with you. Thank you, Jana, for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Johnny.
All right, till the next episode, stay soulful.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love it if you could go ahead and give this a rating as well as subscribe. Also, you can check us out on Instagram under the Soulful Hunter Podcast. Make sure to tag us in pictures and posts and use the hashtag Soulful Hunter. To find out more about the Soulful Hunter Podcast, go to soulfulhunter.com and be sure to follow the podcast as we are going to be bringing you a lot of great information, insight, and changing lives through primal adventure. I look forward to connecting with you on the next episode. Stay tuned and stay soulful.